Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello, and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, we are actually going to take a little different tack on a couple of things. One, Mark's going to put on his teacher hat and going to educate us on a couple of things. And then I guarantee you that he's going to piss some of you off. And I just want everybody to know this, because the way that we just kind of set this up as we were doing our pre-recording talk, my response was, you're probably going to piss a lot of people off with that. And he said, yes, I know that. So anyway, what are we talking about today? And why, first off, is this education that people need, Mark? And then secondly, what is the contrarian opinion you're bringing to today's podcast?
Well, first, let me say that I've often said to people that the key to success is low expectations. You've pretty much shot that in the foot right there.
Dude, I'm not going to set you up for low expectation. I've been podcasting with you for 3 years. I have a high expectation of you. Bring it today, dude.
I am going to bring it. Here's what I'm going to tell you. We have talked in previous podcasts about the danger in cookie cutter investing. When you are communicating to the masses about investing, and financial advisors and investors have been trained for decades on a certain way to invest, when you are opposed to that, or where you have a different mindset than that you don't believe in that sort of thing, then people may get a little bit upset with you, right? So the first question you want to ask yourself, Biggie, is what is modern portfolio theory, right? Yeah. Remember that from your own days?
I do. And not only do I remember when I originally started learning about modern portfolio theory, but it's a big deal in I'm sorry, in Wall Street marketing and communication. I mean, if you type this in, everybody, Fidelity, BlackRock, everybody's got a huge piece on modern portfolio theory. But where are you going with that?
Okay, so remember, we believe that successful investing is investing like a business owner, right? Having the ability to know what you own and why you own it. I'm super excited. We just filed our trademark. I think it's probably just about done, and put it up on our website at investwithclarity.com in big, bold letters. Ready for this one? Can you put a price on clarity? Can you put a price on clarity? Well, my fundamental belief is really that modern portfolio theory clouds clarity even more. So let's first start with what is the definition of modern portfolio theory? Modern portfolio theory, also referred to as MPT, is a theory on how risk-averse investors can construct portfolios to maximize expected return based on a given level of market risk. Do you even have a sense of where I'm going to go with this?
I do. I know exactly where you're going with this. I'm super excited about the journey. So go ahead.
Well, first of all, our basic premise that we tell investors all the time is you don't invest in the stock market. And this is what people don't realize. People think, people always ask, do you invest in the stock market? Or what do you think the stock market's going to do this year? I don't care. I don't care what the stock market's going to do. I care about how the businesses we own execute on their business plans. And by the way, can I please get more volatility? I mean, volatility is what creates the opportunity to take advantage of buying more of great businesses on sale. So when you look at modern portfolio theory on the surface, risk averse investors can construct portfolios to maximize expected return based on a given level of quote market risk. How about we talk about investment risk, not market risk? Because the market going up and down is not risk, that's opportunity. If your portfolio is adequately allocated, you shouldn't worry about volatility. So the statement here that says risk averse investors, If you're risk averse, you should have an asset allocation strategy that minimizes risk and takes advantage of financial opportunities, right? And given market risk, this is because people hear everyone talk about stock market risk. I've actually heard many financial advisors say, why do you invest in individual stocks? Those are too risky. Like, what? That may be, excuse me, I'm going to be on a rant today. I can already feel it. That may be one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. When someone says it's too risky to own stocks, do you own a mutual fund? Yeah. Well, did you know you own stocks in the mutual fund? Yeah, but that's different because it's well diversified. Oh, so in other words, you own 5,000 stocks and about 4,450 of them are crappy investments that you shouldn't own in the first place. Is that what you're basically telling me? So the idea of modern portfolio theory, which was, and look, the idea conceptually, I think, is right, because be quite frank with you, in our asset allocation strategy we use, you could argue that there are elements of modern portfolio risk in our portfolios, even though it's individual securities. And I'll get to that in a second. Harry Markowitz, who pioneered this theory, actually got a Nobel Prize in economics for this paper he put together on modern portfolio theory. Let me give people who listen to the podcast a general basic understanding of what modern portfolio theory really is. It is the process of owning investments in different asset classes, including large cap, mid cap, small cap growth, large cap, mid cap, small cap value. I'll define what those mean in a minute. Real estate, international, emerging markets, commodities, and bonds. Now, let me tell you first, growth and value stocks. The industry has categorized growth stocks and value stocks in two different ways. Growth stocks are stocks that traditionally trade at much higher multiples to earnings. A lot of times they don't even have earnings. You are investing, banking on the future growth of the company. Well, if you're investing, banking on the future growth of something that's not happened yet, and you're a risk adverse investor, probably shouldn't really be in growth stocks in theory, right?
That is exactly the opposite.
Right. But sound investing would mean you want to own growth stocks as a portion of your asset allocation. Now, we've had a very unique 10-year period here, which we really saw the sea change start last fall. And if you actually were to study our movements in our portfolio management, you would see that we had been pulling back, taking profit in a lot of our growth stuff, and heavily weighting our portfolios into what's considered value stocks. Value stocks are stocks that traditionally trade at lower PE ratios, price to earnings ratios, lower multiples, are a little bit more steady kind of businesses. There are businesses that people consider value. The two biggest areas that have been value really in the last 12 months would be energy and financials. Okay. At the same time, while everyone's been focused on COVID and everyone's been focusing on, you know, when the economy is going to get back up and going, unbeknownst to a lot of people, interest rates, the 10-year treasury went from 2% before COVID down to 50 basis points in August of last year.
Which would be 0.5.
0.5, yep. Now, what most investors don't realize is that you make money two ways in bonds. The first way you make money in bonds, of course, is on the coupon that you get every month, every quarter, every half a year, every year.
You just used a word. I don't think people know what that means. What is a coupon?
Your interest payment. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coupons. So your interest payment that comes monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, or annually. The second way you make money in bonds is by capital appreciation. When you look at an asset allocated portfolio, asset allocated portfolios would say in modern portfolio theory that based on your investment objectives, your tolerance for risk, really what it is tolerance for volatility, you should own a portion in bonds. I think that's a crock of crap. Now, I'm going to get to that in a second, but before I do, let me explain why you want to have an asset allocated portfolio, right? And you can do it with growth stocks, you can do it with value stocks, and you can do it without bonds. stocks.
Hold on. You didn't define, so you defined growth stocks. I need you to define value stocks before.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, low. They're traditionally low PE stocks, low price to earnings stocks, price to book. They traditionally have a PEG ratio, which is a price divided by earnings and growth, PE ratio divided by growth rate. Generally, stocks are considered a quote value stock when they have a PEG ratio under 1.0. Okay. Now, I don't want to get super technical and all that, but there we saw last summer the beginning shift of growth stocks into value stocks, which is why the financial services, the financial ETF and energy ETF are two of the best performing sectors of 2021 so far. There's a lot of undercurrents that are going on within the markets, which include the interest rates moving back very quickly from 0.5 last August to now 1.66 as we're doing this podcast. And people are freaking out because as interest rates go up, people get fearful of inflation, right? Because higher interest rates lead to higher inflation in theory. Without going off the rails, without getting too technical, here's the bottom line. Interest rates are still lower than pre-pandemic, period. You could go back to when Trump was elected president. I'm trying to remember what the interest rates were then. Well, let's do it this way. Pre-COVID, early February last year, so just over a year ago, the 10-year was at 2.0. In September of 18, it stood at 3.25. So we went from 3.25 in 18 down to 0.5. I started telling you how you make money in bonds. It's the interest payment and it's capital appreciation. You have to remember, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, that bonds work on a teeter-totter effect. On one side of the teeter-totter, you have the interest rate. On the other side of the teeter-totter, you have your price of the bond. Bonds are sold at the par of 1,000, call it, and you have your stated interest rate. Let's call it 3%. Well, if you buy a bond that's got a 3% interest payment at $1,000 and interest rates have gone to 0.50%, that means that the interest rate has gone down. In theory, that means the value of the bond goes up. So it's the teeter-totter effect. What most investors do not understand is in the 35-year bull market, whatever it's been in bonds, that the majority of money that people have made in their modern portfolio theory portfolio has been by the capital appreciation of bonds, not the interest payment. That's extremely important to remember, capital appreciation as interest rates gone down. Now, what happens though if interest rates go up? The value of your bond is going to go down. And the amount that it's going to go down is going to be relative to when the maturity of that bond happens. So a lot of investors will take the position, Matt, that, well, bonds are safer because I know I'm going to get my principal back when it's done. Hey, I think that's super awesome. If you want to wait 5, 10, 15, 20 years to get your money back while interest rates have doubled on you, you go right ahead and do that.
Now,
I wouldn't. But
right. Now, in modern portfolio theory, I've heard other financial services professionals say you need a 60-40 stock to bond. They're talking 40%. And if stuff goes bad, it flips.
Right.
40%.
So we really haven't owned bonds since 2015 when we thought bonds were, and over the last 5 to 6 years, if you took out 2020, it'd be really bad. But even if you throw in 2020 over the last 5, 6 years, the average rate of return has not been that great for most bond funds. Certainly, as modern portfolio would say, to the risk that you are taking to get that return. And my position has always been, because advisors always ask me, why don't you own bonds? Why don't you own bonds? And my response to that is because they're not good investments. Why do I want to own something that's not a good investment? Well, but you want to maintain the beta of the portfolio, the relative volatility of the portfolio. My response to that is, why do I want to do that? Because volatility creates the opportunity to buy more great businesses on sale. So people listening to this podcast right now are going, okay, I'm hearing the guy say he doesn't own bonds. He likes volatility so he can take advantage of buying more companies on sale. But if he's fully invested in equities, how is he going to do that?
I remember asking you that question early on in our relationship because it made no sense to me. And you were like, I have an answer for that. Here it is. So what is it?
The answer is you still have to worry about asset allocation in your portfolio, a blend of industry, a blend of valuation, a blend of types of companies and their relative behavior and volatility over time. So when COVID hit and the S&P went down 30-35%, we went down less than the market. We shifted. The market went back up, and I think the S&P was up, what, 16% last year for growth? We were up 55. So how does that happen? That happens because when you have a well asset allocated portfolio and you have the flexibility and the transparency, remember the four keys to successful investing, it allows you the ability to adjust on a dime right away. You can adjust. Now, this is where you probably were thinking I was going to tick people off because I've given a lot of information. People will probably want to listen to this podcast twice. The reason why you said probably people would get ticked off is that, you know, I've been doing this now. I originally got licensed in 1986. I was still in college at the time. They were preaching modern portfolio theory then. When I finally started my own firm in late 1994 and started Nepsis, modern portfolio theory was the majority of the way that people were allocating portfolios. Because remember, financial advisors are not money managers. Their job, they're wealth managers. Their job is to set up an allocation, set it and forget it, right? Well, setting and forget it, forgetting about it means that you miss out on all the volatility and all the opportunities to take advantage of buying stuff on sale. That flexibility. A lot of financial advisors out there have 20, 30, 40, 50% in their portfolio in bonds because that's what modern portfolio says it should do, even though they're bad investments.
Can't you buy bonds at a discount though?
Relative to what?
I don't know. So I'm sorry, you just triggered a bunch of things with me. And I have to ask you these questions because this could sure. be what our listeners are wondering. So number one, can you buy bonds at a discount? So can you somehow play that market, play in a positive way, play that market so that you can do investing with clarity, and or can you buy an individual corporate bond or whatever? Does that fit into the Nepsis way?
Right. Okay. Yes. You asked more questions than you probably realized. Number one, the question you asked is, can you buy bonds at a discount? I would say with the caveat, can you buy bonds at a discount relative to its par value? Of course you can, all the time. As interest rates go up, the value of a bond goes down. It is selling at a discount to its par value.
Beautiful.
So if you buy the bond at a discount, eventually it goes back to par, you're all set. You can buy at a discount. And if you want to wait 5 years, 7 years to make 2% or 3%, whatever it is, you can go do that. The second question you asked is, can you buy individual bonds at a discount? Are there values out there in bonds? Yes, there are. You can buy bonds at a discount that are on sale because there are certain events that are causing the bonds to trade at a discount right now. But if they're trading at, if bonds are trading at a discount, then there's got to be an issue of why they're at a discount, which would mean in theory that bond's more risky. Right?
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Now, what's the return I'm going to get on that bond if I buy that bond and I hold it till its maturity? You have to assess the risk associated with buying that bond and what you're going to make in holding it over the time period you're going to hold it.
And some of these bonds are long-term holding.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
7, 10, 15 years, right? Yeah.
Sure. Now, I would rather own a company stock. Let me tell you why I like owning company stocks. Company stocks can adjust prices. If you get inflation and prices of things go up, companies are going to increase their prices to keep their profits going. Bonds, you can't do that because bonds are a debt instrument. I borrowed X amount of money at X interest rate for X period of time. That's why if interest rates go up, value of bonds go down because people can go buy bonds with higher interest rates and pay less. Bonds, to me, are extremely risky, which means that for traditional cookie cutter modern portfolio theory, that's risky. And risk-adjusted return, how much risk am I taking to get the returns I'm getting, becomes extremely important. That is why I circle back to my original way back in the beginning podcasts that the key to successful investing are the four keys: your investment philosophy, strategy, flexibility, and transparency. We are taught as investors that volatility is risk. Volatility is not risk if your portfolio is allocated according to your investment objectives. That we should be able to agree on that, right? Let me just say it again.
No, I agree with you, but my son was asking me this question. Now, this is, I'm not going to get yet because, you know, whatever. Even though I did, I thought I was really close with the bond thing on discount and being able to buy individual bonds. I thought I was going to get anyway. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, I failed miserably at trying to get Mark into a corner here. But so here's the question. So in retirement, so you've retired, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm utilizing the Invest with Clarity sort of, you know, idea here that I know what I own and why I own it. I'm taking income from my portfolio. Why isn't volatility a concern of mine at that point if I'm taking income from my portfolio?
Well, you're not taking income from your portfolio. You are spending down a bucket of money.
You know what, dude? I don't think you've ever said that. I think that's the first time I've ever heard you say that.
Well,
we've never talked about and by the way, I want everybody to know at some point here in the near future, we're going to talk about the not necessarily what Mark does, but part of the team that he has are actual certified financial planners who create a financial plan based off of the Investment Clarity philosophy. And that to me is something that I've never heard you say before. And that's fascinating to me because now in my mind, which by the way is quite foggy and old, makes a lot of freaking sense because you're talking about taking income from the income. Yeah, I like that. That makes sense.
Let me help you. I've talked about it indirectly before. There's two ways in which a portfolio goes up in value. There's only two. It's either capital appreciation or it's dividend interest. Dividend or interest or capital appreciation. The term used in the industry is what's called total return. Total return is capital appreciation plus dividends plus interest. You're sitting in your IRA, you're taking money out of your IRA. Your IRA's got X amount of money in it, and you're taking $3,000 a month, $4,000 a month, whatever, $5,000, whatever you're taking. Okay. But when you're taking that money out, you're taking it out of a complete asset allocation, which should include capital appreciation, dividends, and interest. In the olden days, as they like to say, you would have a lot of retired people that would say, you know, I don't want to touch my principal. I just want to take a dividends and interest, and that's what I'm going to live on in my portfolio. Well, that worked fine and dandy when interest rates were 7, 8, 9, 10%. But when they're 0.5% to 2% and you got $1 million in there and you're getting 2% on it, you ain't going too far. So you have to have a portfolio, particularly in a rising interest rate environment still, a blend of capital appreciation and dividends slash interest. When you look at volatility, volatility creates opportunity. The asset allocation should have, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, it's not really modern portfolio theory, but there's element of modern portfolio theory to the extent that you are owning growth, you are owning value, you are owning dividends slash interest, and maybe you own cash. You know, I've had people say to me, why, you know, I pay you a fee to manage my money. Why is my money sitting in cash? And my first response is, well, isn't cash an asset? Right?
Yeah.
You don't pay me to own cash. You pay me to know when to own cash. It's just like bonds or equities. Cash, for those retired people, you can have a bucket of cash of 3, 5, 10%. 10% if you're taking out 4 or 5% a year is 2 years of cash to allow the portfolio to work. This is the mentality we're talking about as a short-term thinker. If you're a longer-term thinker, and don't say I'm 85 years old, I don't have long-term. If you're 85 years old, then put 5 years of cash in there and leave it alone, forget about it, and don't lose any sleep over it and let the rest of your portfolio do its thing, right? At the end of the day, it is all about portfolio structure. However, most financial advisors structure portfolios without knowing what they own and why they own it. They do it in buckets of investment, including too many stocks and too many bonds, which in my opinion actually makes the portfolio completely inefficient, a complete lack of flexibility, a complete lack of transparency, and therefore a complete lack of clarity that would enable you to take advantage of volatility and buy great investments, great companies when they go on sale.
Fascinating. I mean, honestly, you know, you would figure that from all of these years that we've been podcasting together, that my ignorant, humble position that I happen to hold in our relationship, I still learn stuff, dude. Like, seriously, like you broke down two or three things. And one of them that I really, really want to highlight here is that there is truth in modern portfolio theory, but it was written and got the Nobel Prize in economics, which is historical looking, not anything else. I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. And then two, that just because somebody won a Nobel Prize for something doesn't mean that it's applicable for everybody if you ever look at any of the other Nobel Prize winners.
Or when you won it in 52, or when you won it in 52,
yeah, when interest rates are different
than they are today. Yeah. The landscape is completely different today.
It would be very interesting if you know, somebody would really take that Nobel Prize winning thing and then bring it in to the 21st century. Just the simple fact, and you say this, Mark, all the time, that people aren't holding investments for as long as they did in 1992, right? I mean, goodness gracious, that changes modern portfolio theory. But the other thing I wanted to highlight very quickly is I love the idea that bonds have inherent risk that people just flat out don't know anything about.
That is correct.
And that is not risk equals great volatility that we can take advantage of. That's risk.
Right.
You laid that on the table.
It's called purchasing power risk.
Yeah.
Your ability to purchase things in an inflationary environment when you're getting paid a lot less than what inflation is at. Yeah.
At some point, I would love to pick your brain a little bit more, and we don't have time to do it today, so we'll wrap up today. But I'd also like to talk to you about what happens when we're not at 0.5% interest. When we're, I don't know if this can happen in our lifetime because, I mean, we're old. You know, what happens if it was 12% again? I mean, do you remember mortgages that were 12 to 15%?
Yeah. Well, it's all relative, right? So a dollar is a dollar is a dollar, right? It's all relative. You have to assess at that time, what are the best investment vehicles to put in when interest rates are 12%?
And that's where clarity.
And I'm not saying that when bonds get to 3 or 4 or 5 or 6%, that there won't be value in owning them at that point. Mm-hmm. But we're not there yet. And based on what's happening today, if you've got a dollar to invest, where's the best place to put that dollar? And we think bonds are extremely high risk. And you're right. The biggest problem is here, investors, they don't understand the inherent risk of owning bonds. And dare I say, there's probably a lot of financial advisors that don't either, but that's too general of a statement. But a lot of investors don't understand that if interest rates were to go up by 10, 20, 30%, the impact that would have on your bond investment, your bond portfolio, could be dramatic.
Yeah.
That could be a problem for investors in retirement.
Well, Mark, thanks again, man. I'm glad that you put on your teacher hat today and you did a little bit of edutainment. You did some good, passionate discussion about something that is probably one of the most contrarian things I've heard you say in quite a long time, because I think a lot of people do equate the bond market and utilizing the 60-40 modern portfolio theory asset allocation.
Yeah, I mean, we really haven't owned bonds for almost probably 6 years. And people have asked, and you know, our portfolios have continued to maintain the level of volatility accustomed to a client's objectives, but while at the same time providing that statistical alpha return in their portfolio relative to that risk.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to trademark your magnificent statement there. You've earned it. You've put in the time. You've put it in saying it enough times where I think it's burned into at least our listeners' brains, as mine, because I still will be out and about with friends and they'll say something and I'm like, ooh, what? That's a nepsis sort of freaking, you know, trigger that Mark's got me thinking about, because you're wrong. And let me tell you why. Actually, I just refer them to the podcast, by the way. I'm not a licensed financial services professional. Anyway, Mark, thank you very much for your brain. We always appreciate it. Thank you for dropping some good knowledge and allowing people to learn how to think differently.
Always good to be here, boss.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time Mark comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And more importantly, make sure that you're sharing this podcast with your friends and family. It's always, always good to know more about how to invest and make sure you're investing with clarity. Because if you don't know what you own and why you own it, why are you doing it in the first place? So for everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.